Something for the holidays today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. It's Christmas Eve, time either to do some last-minute shopping or just relax with us and Garrison Keillor on Scribble. Well, appropriately, we're just taking the day off.
Well,
no interviews today. It's just you and me, pal.
I do have some last-minute shopping to do.
Oh, you do? I used to do all my shopping on Christmas Eve. I've talked about this before. Where I worked, I made enough money to live, sort
right.
of. But it was the Christmas bonus that came
right.
at Christmas Eve. With that in my hot little hand, I ran out and started doing my shopping for the family. As stores closed across the Quad Cities, I was exiting. And as a result, whatever was available on Christmas Eve is what the kids got. But, you know, tying this to our program, well, we really ought to do it somehow or other.
Yes.
I read my first novel as a result of a Christmas present. I've talked about this before, but my older sister Marge gave me two novels for Christmas when I was in the first grade. And I opened them up and thought, what is this? And I paged through it. There were four pictures in each one. I thought, well, heck with this. I put it aside. But then about, I suppose, 3 or 4 days into the holidays, I was bored, as kids get bored, and I picked up the first one, Jerry Todd and the Whispering Mummy. And I started reading it. And I read the whole thing and was hooked. I quickly picked up the second one, Jerry Todd and the Oak Island Treasure, and read that and looked around for more. Well, my sister Marge discovered she had made a hit. And so thereafter, for my birthday and at Christmas, I got two Jerry Todd books. A heavy investment. They each cost 50 cents. But this was way back in the 30s. So, you know, money was really tight then. But I never forgot those books. And years ago, I went searching and found a copy of Jerry Todd and the Whispering Mummy just to put in my library. I haven't opened it, but that I'll never forget that. And it was that that put me on to reading. Before that, it was almost anything else but reading. But that did it. Boy, that sealed the deal.
And how old were you?
Well, the first grade, everyone says, let's see, about six or seven.
Six or seven?
Yeah.
Well, I think I was about that old, too. My mother was an English teacher, but she made no plans to have me read before it was proper to learn to read, which was about first grade. Mm-hmm. So I can remember the Dick and Jane series, and I can remember discovering that these little marks on papers had meaning.
Yeah.
And this said Dick, and this said Jane, and this said run.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as books are concerned, I was fortunate enough to have a family friend with whom we'd grown up in Fountain City, Wisconsin. I lived there for 3 years. And she was that kind of friend who took the place of an aunt who every Christmas sent me a book.
Mm-hmm.
And so my reading for probably, she did this till I was 15 or 16, at least, maybe till I was 20. But every Christmas I would get a book from her. And I think one of the first books I got was Dr. Doolittle. And I got really hooked on Dr. Doolittle. Do you ever read, are you familiar with Dr. Doolittle?
No, that's one.
With his panoply of odd animals, the push me pull you that had mm-hmm. head at both ends and couldn't decide whether to go or he went to Africa and would pick up strange animals and so forth and so on and take them back to his zoo in England. But I read Winter on the Johnny Smoker, Roald Dahl's Gremlins during World War II. You know, the Gremlins are the ones that made little holes in aircraft. It wasn't the bullets.
Oh, yeah.
And so my reading was really determined not so much by my mother as by Christine Mathis, this family friend.
What's interesting is you mentioned books that you read, which proves to me that you're just a kid, because I was earlier, and I started reading the books that were all the rage in those days. Tom Swift, of course.
Right.
Our elementary school had a complete collection of Tom Swift books, so I read them all. But it was Jerry Todd that got me started. And then you moved on to the Bobbsey Twins and Nancy Drew.
I have read none of those.
Yeah, well, see, I read them all. But then you came afterwards. You came in the next wave. And books had already changed.
Well, by 5 years. Time. No, I think probably it was my mother. My mother, I don't think, would have liked the Bobbsey Twins. That it wasn't literature.
Oh,
you know,
I see.
My mother's big failure in life was that she never got me to read the biography of Thomas Alva Edison.
Oh, really?
You know, it would have made her heart glad if I finally had sat down. To this day, I have not read the biography because he was the ideal.
Oh, yeah.
He was a guy who got things done, who invented things. And I would have loved the biography. I like Thomas Alva Edison. I like science fiction. I like science. But the fact that she wanted me to read it. But I think what I really remember isn't so much Christmas at childhood, but we were children of the Depression, and our neighborhood in Jackson, Minnesota was a particularly depressed place. I think several of the people, my next-door neighbors, were on relief because they had no way of making a living whatsoever. And every Friday evening, year-round, my mother would have a gathering of all the neighborhood children, and we would always do a craft. Like in Christmas time, we would use coat hangers and go out and cut evergreen boughs and make a wreath. And at Halloween, we would bob for apples and play games. But then she would always read one chapter from a chapter book every Friday. One of the books was Black Beauty that I remember. And then she would always read either some poems or stories to us. And there probably were 15 to 20 kids in the neighborhood that would gather around, and then we'd have a snack. And that's what really, I think, turned me into a reader.
I suppose that's one of the things that makes us old codgers, is we remember those times when television didn't mediate everything, when we would gather around in somebody's living room or somebody's yard and play or interact with one another. Now we gather around a glowing screen, and furthermore, it's become reduced now to a cell phone. People just look at that little screen. And the problem with that is, I'm not a Luddite. I don't want to be against all these things, but those things can interfere with your life as a human being. You don't see people, and you are subject to whatever happens to be coursing through that. And it's just now dawning on people that more folks get their news, fake news, from the Internet than they do from reliable news sources, which is no wonder we have all sorts of crazy ideas.
Well, and there are organizations that deliberately send out fake newsletters.
Oh, yeah.
News.
That's because people, if you feed people something that feeds their fears and anxieties or prejudices, they will stay with you and you can sell ads. And if you can make money, do it. So, yeah. But, yeah, Christmas for me will always be about those books. There were many other things. A Stanley Steel set. Do you ever see one of those things?
No, but I did get an Erector set, an electric train.
Well, see, the Erector set was the skeleton. The Stanley Steel were plates of metal that you put together. I like the solidity of those things. But still, when I think back to it, I think to those Jerry Todd books and the marvelously perceptive gift of my older sister. Older sisters can really do you a lot of good in this world. Well, we have, we're kind of idling here on Christmas Eve, but I want to get to some poetry. But before we do that, let's give Garrison Keillor his allotted 5 minutes, and Roll Tweet and I will be back shortly. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. Well, Roll Tweet and I are kind of idling through our Christmas Eve broadcast, but one of the things I wanted to do is to attempt something that I've never been able to complete before, and that is my favorite Christmas poem by Edna St. Vincent Millay, a poet who is shamefully neglected. She is, I think, one of the great American poets, and with her penetrating to the core of human experience and feeling, and then Dorothy Parker with her wry, cynical verses, between those two, I am perfectly happy. I really love them. But this is an odd poem. You know the Ballad of the
Harp. Oh, I do, yes.
Yeah. This is a great poem by Edna St. Vincent Millay. Son, said my mother when I was knee-high, you've need of clothes to cover you, and not a rag have I. There's nothing in the house to make a boy breeches, nor shears to cut cloth with, nor thread to take stitches. There's nothing in the house but a loaf end of rye, and a harp with a woman's head nobody will buy. And she began to cry. That was in the early fall. When came the late fall, son, she said, the sight of you makes your mother's blood crawl, little skinny shoulder blades sticking through your clothes, and where you'll get a jacket from, God above knows. It's lucky for me, lad, your daddy's in the ground and can't see the way I let his son go around. And she made a queer sound. That was in the late fall. When the winter came, I'd not a pair of breeches nor a shirt to my name. I couldn't go to school or out of doors to play, and all the other little boys passed our way. Son, said my mother, come climb into my lap, and I'll chafe your little bones while you take a nap. And oh, but we were silly, for half an hour or more, me with my long legs dragging on the floor, a rock, rock, rocking to a Mother Goose rhyme. Ah, but we were happy for half an hour's time. But there was I, a great boy, and what would people say to hear my mother singing me to sleep all day in such a daft way? Men say the winter was bad that year. Fuel was scarce and food was dear. A wind with a wolf's head howled about our door, and we burned up the chairs and sat upon the floor. All that was left us was a chair we couldn't break and a harp with a woman's head nobody would take for song or pity's sake. The night before Christmas I cried with the cold. I cried myself to sleep like a two-year-old. And in the deep night I felt my mother rise and stare down upon me with love in her eyes. I saw my mother sitting on the one good chair, a light falling on her from I couldn't tell where, looking 19 and not a day older, and the harp with a woman's head leaned against her shoulder. Her thin fingers moving in the thin, tall strings were weaving wonderful things. Many bright threads from where I couldn't see were running through the harp strings rapidly, and gold threads whistling through my mother's hand. I saw the web grow and the pattern expand. She wove a child's jacket, and when it was done, she laid it on the floor and wove another one. She wove a red cloak so regal to see. She's made it for a king's son, I said, and not for me. But I knew it was for me. She wove a pair of breeches quicker than that. She wove a pair of boots and a little cocked hat. She wove a pair of mittens. She wove a little blouse. She wove all night in the still, cold house. She sang as she worked, and the harp strings spoke. Her voice never faltered, and the thread never broke. And when I awoke, there sat my mother, with a harp against her shoulder, looking 19 and not a day older, a smile about her lips and a light about her head, and her hands in the harp strings frozen dead. And piled up beside her and toppling to the skies were the clothes of a king's son, just my size. What can you say about that?
Well, Yeah, why, you know, when I was in high school, we had Edna St. Vincent Millay poems. When I was at St. Olaf College in the early 50s, she was in the textbooks, and we studied her, and she has just seemed to have fallen off the charts, and I cannot figure out why.
That poem just rocks me. It is one of those fantastic things. And she wrote it in a ballad style, which is not easy to do.
No.
And if you want to know where I get my love of forms from, it's from poems like that.
Right, yeah.
When you can bring off something that powerful and be strict in the form, I think that is just marvelous.
Well, one of her poems I know by heart says a lot about her. My candle burns at both the ends, it shall not last the night. But ah, my foes and oh, my friends, it gives a lovely light. That's Edna St. Vincent Millay.
Ballad of the Harp Weaver says so much about a mother's gifts. You know, the mother dies and she leaves these clothes. This is all fantastic and so on. But to me, it speaks persuasively of a mother's gifts to her children.
Right.
And does it in a lyrical and semi-fantastic vein, but very, very human. So anyway, that's my Christmas gift. I just love Edna St. Vincent Millay. Is there anything about Christmas that sticks with you besides the gifts you used to get of books?
No, I mean, there are my favorite. I guess if I had to pick a favorite Christmas poem, it would be W.H. Auden's For the Time Being, A Christmas Oratorio. And I tried to find a copy of that. My copy of Auden is somewhere up in some stacks, but it takes us all the way from Advent to the day after New Year's, at the end of Twelfth Night, where the last part of the oratorio goes, well, that's that. You know, we dismantle the tree, take it down, go back to our regular lives again. But it is a long, great, great poem to Christmas.
There's another guy you don't hear much about.
Not so much anymore, and there again, I'm not sure why.
Why do poets pass in and out of fashion? I don't understand that. Because there are some cavalier poets whose works were rather slight, but I'll never forget them. And of course, there's the great bulk of William Shakespeare's stuff. But you run across a poem, and it becomes part of you. And yet, it's true, when you talk about poetry, people say, well, I don't care for poetry. Can we ever resolve that?
I went through a kind of snarky period when I was reading science fiction, and for a long time, my favorite Christmas story was a science fiction work by Arthur C. Clarke, a little short story called The Star. Are you familiar with it?
No.
This spaceship is on its way to a distant part of the galaxy where a long time ago there was a supernova that blew up the entire solar system, and including an Earth around that star that had an incredibly intelligent advanced civilization. And this spaceship times when that supernova took place, and it turns out it was 4 BC, our time.
4 BC.
The Star of Bethlehem was a supernova that destroyed an entire civilization.
Oh.
So that's a little on the other end from the Ballad of the Harp Weaver, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it's true. Science captivated me, too. By the time I got into, I suppose, sixth grade, science was it. What did it for me was the first time I saw a diagram of an atom, and I saw the solar system. And it's as if all of creation came crashing down onto that page.
Yeah.
It changed my way of looking at everything.
Nature repeats itself.
Yeah.
Right?
And now we think of the solar system as this orderly procession of planets. Now they find all these other things zipping around, yeah. And it looks more and more like an atom. Yeah.
Well, it was Thoreau that said, God but patented a leaf, right? Yeah. The pattern in the leaf is the pattern in your hand, is the pattern of blood vessels, is the pattern of rivers.
Mm-hmm. The unity in things is just, I can understand why people can just be staggered by what they see in nature if you really look deeply into nature. And the mystery of it all is overwhelming.
Well, and it's getting more mysterious.
Oh,
you know, when I was growing up, I might have even kept up my interest in science, except I got to the point where I thought, well, it's all cut and dried and, you know, 2 and 2 equals 4. And it turns out, you know, we now know that time is an illusion.
Yeah, well,
how can there be no such thing as time?
Time is inherent in matter. That's all. It is amazing when you think of the complexity. And I think that's why people prefer to retreat into stories. In the early days, we told stories to explain what was going on, because we needed something to hang on to. So we told all these stories. And now that we look more deeply into nature, we think, well, that story is just a story. Here's what actually happened. People would prefer to keep the stories. They're a little more comfortable. But the reality of things, or what we're learning, can be very upsetting. Life is lived more gently if it moves calmly without all these constant dislocations.
But certainly you don't think Greek literature is just a retreat from reality, isn't
it? No,
I don't. It's a confrontation of it, I think.
I have a Greek tragedy to me. It's a simplification, but talking last week about The Theater of War by Brian Dorries, his extraordinary use of Greek tragedy with veterans who are wounded, showing them how the Greeks dealt with wounded warriors and so on. I've often said there are three ways of looking at the world, which is a real simplification. But there's religion or faith. There's reason, you know, science, teasing things out, or tragedy. In tragedy, a person, male or female, chooses to do something and follows it through to the end, regardless of the consequences. And you look at that and you think about it. And it can illuminate your life or make you question your life. It's a powerful, powerful form of communication. Well, I don't know how we got from Christmas books to Greek tragedy.
Well, it all, you know, every discussion I ever had with Treadway, you know, wherever you start, you know, an extra glass of milk in the cafeteria, his claim was you'll all always end up with Aristotle or Plato or Greek tragedy somewhere.
Well, you can't escape those guys, nor can we escape our theme and the strictures of time. But thank you for being with us on this Christmas Eve. I'm Don Wooten with Roald Dorman. We'll be back next week for New Year's Eve on Scribble.